Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, welcome to another episode of This Life with Dr. Bob Forrest. We are going to be joined in just a moment by the great Tom Sizemore. He'll be with us by Skype, and we've had a little bit of technical issues getting him on board here, so that's kind of what we're working on right now. Bob's sitting over there working on the Skype, and we know Tom well. Tom and Bob and I go back over 10 years together, and he eventually did celebrity rehab, and he's doing really well. Now he's written a book. The author is here. It's Anna David. She's joining us as well, and let's get right to it.
Oh, I feel better already. Everybody else can leave. I feel much better. Drew's there.
I'm fine, Drew.
I've got Anna next to me. It's Anna. Anna David.
You're a ghostwriting biographer.
You don't want me.
How about
to leave.
That?
Here you are.
How is everybody? How was your holidays?
Really
everybody
good.
Good?
Good.
Really good. How about you?
Me too.
Yeah.
I got this big job just last Monday.
So we can say it. We can talk about the job. We just can't talk about the specifics, right?
Right. I can't talk about anything except that it's 18 episodes on Showtime.
Right.
Hey,
David, Mr. Lynch is directing all of them, and Kyle MacLachlan. I'm at liberty to say these following: Kyle MacLachlan's coming back, Laura Dern, Sherilyn Finn, and Heather Graham. And there's three like leading characters, and I'm one of them.
How
and
cool.
We start principal photography January 15th.
Oh my God!
You didn't know about Twin Peaks?
Well, I didn't know you were a fanatic about
it. I'm a fanatic.
I didn't know it was coming back. I was a fanatic.
So, I was a fanatic about it,
I look better here.
And didn't he say
to get myself where I look good?
He said it. He
look good anyway, Tom.
This isn't. They're not recording your visual anyway. You don't have to worry, Tom. It's just the audio.
Well, I don't care.
So here we go. But
can you see me?
Yeah, well kind of. There you are.
Yeah. You see me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So here's the thing that I wanted to tell you when I saw you. This couple is now doing this thing that's really fun, which is they're having huge birthday parties for homeless kids at the mission. And so this
couple's doing what? Bob, repeat that again.
They're doing birthday parties for all the little kids who are, you know, living in the missions and living in Skid Row and homeless. And they do.
Oh, yeah?
They do birthday parties for the kids.
No, that's cool.
Is this
such a great thing?
Lattice Park is that where it is?
It's
in the mission, the actual mission. They give them the rental, you know, the space to throw the birthday parties
downtown.
Downtown. That's Tom's domain. That's how he got it together.
At the mission.
Most people go downtown to get high. Tom goes downtown to get off drugs.
Believe it or not, that's true. That's how I got it together. I didn't think that would be the way. It was just I fell into it.
Huh.
With Clancy.
I went over there one day at someone's. I don't remember who even just suggested it to me.
It was
it
me.
Been you, Bob.
It was me.
And I ended up running into Clancy, and he said, "Well, come back. Why don't you come back? Whatever tomorrow, or whatever." And I came back a couple days later, and then I just started going there every day for a long time, and that was the linchpin between Drew and inpatient treatment to a more normal, just going to the 12-step meetings with Denny Trejo, who's my sponsor, but Clancy was the bridge.
Clancy's awesome.
Clancy likes celebrity rehab.
Oh my God!
What's that?
Clancy likes celebrities.
I mowed his lawn a couple
Does
times.
He really?
I wanted to mow his lawn since so many people had. So I actually asked him if
he
I could.
He won't have celebrities mow his lawn.
I asked him if I could, and he said no. I said, "Why can't I?" And he said, "Because you want to."
You know, he has saved more lives than I can count. And I have some really tough people have sort of fumbled their way into the Pacific Group and found him. And man, oh man, oh man.
You know, my first sponsor.
I really, really like him. I mean, I like the guy a lot. He's had like seven lives.
Yeah.
He was a big personality. He was a big radio personality back in the 40s.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that. That's interesting.
40s or 50s. Yes, he was. He had a talk show.
Huh.
In the 40s?
Maybe
how
50s.
Old is he?
The 60s maybe. I mean, I'm getting my years.
He's
80. But he had a talk
he's 80 at least.
Yeah.
He's had a couple lives. Yeah. A couple like full lives.
Tom, has he had more lives than you?
No.
I've only had one. I've had one life.
One very exciting life.
I've had one life that's been interspersed with drug addiction, just like Bob.
Yeah.
Drugs are serious. Really, I didn't never really realize how serious it was. You know, when I first saw Drew in 2002, I still didn't take it seriously. I didn't take it seriously till like 2009.
To be fair, you were taking it seriously for a few minutes, and then you painted your shoes gold or silver. Remember that?
And then Bob
and I were like, "Oh fuck!"
I had a visitor throw an ounce of speed over the fence.
Ugh.
And you guys didn't know anything about it.
But we knew. Trust me, Bob and I.
Painted your shoes. Painted my shoes silver. We were listening to music, and the music was talking to you.
Jennifer.
I was gonna paint oh, Jennifer's yeah. body silver. And she said, maybe we ought to ask Dr. Horosky. I said, let's not ask Dr. Horosky. Let's ask Bob. He's more likely to say yes.
This was pre-celebrity rehab. Oh, yeah. Televised. Oh, yeah.
You know what? Those were the good old days, Bob. I was
yeah,
still young.
It was.
Well,
here's how what? Far you've come. The only thing I remember you had then was an old beat up Bose stereo. That was the only remnant left of the old Tom Sizemore life.
It's gone.
You had the really expensive Bose stereo.
It was a Bose white stereo.
it was like Steve Martin in the
seven
jerk.
For my like, $7 million home, my $7 home, that's all that I had preserved somehow. It meant a great deal to me. And then when I went to Nash House, somehow my shit got packed away. And when I was moving out, I couldn't find it.
Uh-oh.
And I was with. Do you remember the blonde haired guy Bob who had the heart problems, kind of heavy set?
I'm trying.
He was
think.
In my group. Dan.
Dan.
A patient. Let's
yeah,
not patient. Use any more names than
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But
kind of heavy set.
Yeah.
Okay. Dan had moved my stuff from my room. From Nash House into the storage because I went to court and then I didn't have to come back and then I was supposed to come get my stuff and I didn't come get it. And Dan
Donald.
Me goes,
I mean Donald.
Big, what?
Donald? Was it Donald or Dan?
It was Dan.
Dan.
He's,
okay.
He's a big guy, blonde hair, alcoholic. Yeah. And he'd been hit many runs with the police. There were like 9 cops to arrest him. Really strong.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he said if you don't come get your stuff tonight, they're going to move it into the storage. I said, well, Dan, will you move it? And he said, yes. And he broke the boat. So I went to get it a couple days later, and I packed it all up, and we went back to my loft, and I went, where's my stereo, Dan?
Stereo, I knew. It was like, it was his most prized possession.
There was no stereo there. I said, Dan, there was a fucking Bose stereo. Are you crazy?
$1,000 stereo. You're walking around homeless with $1,000 stereo.
And then 2 years later, he wrote me a Christmas card, and he said, PSS, Tom, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're right. There was a stereo there, and I dropped it, and it broke. And I'm very sorry. I hope you'll forgive me.
An amends.
Of sorts.
There it is.
Sorts.
An amends letter.
I'm still in touch with him, yeah.
Let's be fair. What? A real amends, he would have bought him a new stereo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Or not dropped another person's stereo and lied about it.
Here it is. So here we are.
Remember that Bose stereo? You do remember that Bose stereo? That's the first nice thing I bought, like in 1989.
Like $1,000.
Yeah,
remember
it was like $1 million to me.
We came to visit him at his house, and he was in that room. We both
had a remember fantasy. When Drew and I came to the house, and you had the punching bag out on the patio.
I vaguely remember that.
You got pretty crazy, Tom Sizemore.
Oh no! I got really crazy. I didn't get pretty crazy. I know now.
What about the story?
I was up there with no shirt. Listen, I vaguely remember Monroe told me that you alarmed them, and I said, how? Why? She went, well, it's alarming when you see someone like yourself with no clothes, no shirt on, with a baseball bat, periodically hitting a heavy bag. And
Sweating.
You're talking about the guns that you have in your bedroom, and you're profusely sweating and claiming you're not getting high.
Well, and then it got worse.
And you're saying you're sober. That alarmed, was the best
that alarmed,
part.
That alarmed. She said, it even alarmed. She called you, what'd she call you again, Bob? She called you, Country, because of the hat and the red hair. It even alarmed Mr. Country.
But Tom, it got was a one click worse, which was we followed you into the bedroom because you kept locking yourself in the bathroom, and you just start bellowing from in there.
Oh! You started making this wild noise.
Yes,
you
did. And Bob and I.
You did.
It's true. Because listen, Bob and I walked in the bedroom, and that started happening. And we both
bellowing again.
Hang on. Without looking at each other, we both started backing out.
Yeah,
like, oh my God. And we ran out of the house.
I have no recollection. I can't recall.
I think you know that sound you make when you do a big long rail.
I think that was it. Bob, I jumped out of a moving vehicle with people. Yeah, yeah.
To go to the pink dot.
That's indisputable. That's on film.
Pink dot.
I rolled out of a.
It's 2016.
Yeah. I didn't even have a chance to like pull myself together because of the Skype shit.
No, I don't have a story. I just I remember actually.
Who is that?
Anna.
Anna, do I know you?
Yeah, she wrote your book.
Yeah, I mean, after having spent a year and a half with me, I would hope. We talked a lot about you, to be fair, so maybe not.
I was trying to think of something really insulting to say to you, and I just did.
Oh, you had plenty of opportunities that you took to do that before.
Anna, all things being equal, I don't know how we wrote that book because we hated each other's guts.
Here's the thing, Tom. It's news to me that we did.
No, we didn't. We just hated each other periodically.
You know what? There was no hate on my part ever.
Oh, you're so full of shit. You called me up once and said, Tom Seidman, I'll never forget this. I hate Charles Lagold, and I hate you too.
That is so not accurate. It is not. We had some trouble. We had some troubles.
But you quit bi-weekly.
Well, I
quit once, I know. But it
well,
had to do
talk
with...
About, let's talk about the troubles, Tom, because you and I are both known as people who don't want to get the details in the way of a good story, let's say.
I don't want to get the truth in the way of a good story.
Yeah. So here's the deal. You started saying I was your drug dealer. I gave you drugs a couple of times. You gave me money. That does not make a drug dealer.
Yeah, it does.
I don't know if Bob agrees with that.
You came to my house and gave me drugs and I gave you money?
No, at the Viper Room, I gave you drugs. You asked if I had some.
I asked for some drugs, and you said yes.
Yeah, but I was really down and out, so I asked for money in return. Whereas before, I just gave it away.
Right. True.
Yeah. So I'm not a drug dealer, Drew.
The most amazing.
Numerous times.
You were just a good businessman.
Bob was a drug user who became a drug dealer by proxy.
Out of desperation. Tom, you have no many idea how
and
many.
Then he,
go ahead.
Then he resorted to stealing cars.
That was true.
I didn't know that.
That was the end of the game.
The end of the game
was the game then.
I didn't know about that. What happened?
That was in the book, actually.
Yeah, you're not really stealing them. Oh, my God.
Those words came out of your mouth, dude.
Listen, I got a phone call. Everybody got a phone call that morning, Bob, not to bail you out of jail.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah.
And I was a peripheral figure with those guys at that point. I was on the periphery.
I was calling
but I was
everyone
called
I
too
knew
by,
who had
I don't remember who it was.
$43,000.
It was either JD or somebody like that.
Yep.
And they said, regardless of what Bob says or does, do not bail him out of jail.
So who bailed you out?
No, he got he.
Nobody did. That's why I'm alive today.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why he's alive.
Good
job,
Tom.
You met that guy in the jail system that was sort of the
40 mil.
The proxy attorney.
40 mil.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's a guy. You met a lot of guys in jail.
Bob was working at Millie's, the
restaurant,
breakfast place.
Yeah.
And I went there to eat one morning with, I forget who, but John Frusciante was sitting in there. Oh. And he went, hey, Tom, come here. Look at Bob. And I didn't know and I didn't even know you worked there. I went, look at Bob. Bob who? He said, our Bobby. And you were back there doing dishes.
It made John sad to see me doing
that. It made me sad. I said, John, we should pay him however much money he makes to work here. We should double it for him to quit.
No, it saved his life.
Yeah.
You know what John said?
What?
You can pay him to quit. I'm not going to.
IRS. But the idea was that what happened in the 80s and 90s in Hollywood, nobody's really quite sure. That's what I believe. It's all wasted and people are, coming in and out and fame is fleeting.
Yeah.
And there's all this kind of weird stuff. And I see it now with social media. People can stay famous for decades. Huh. It used to be like you had one movie, you did good. You had another movie or you had an album and it did good. And then they just disappeared off the face of the earth. But nowadays, like, people stay famous just off the social media and the weird world of celebrity.
But I would say more people get famous and more people leave fame today but I do think the what made doing the book interesting, going back to not letting the truth get in the way of a good story. What made doing
the book's all true, Anna.
No, I know that because you were the best storyteller I have ever been around. And I've told you this. You talk. Well,
my best stories probably weren't true, though.
That was the problem. You are such a convincing storyteller.
Okay, so I want to set the record straight. Tom, yes or no, you played college football?
I played high school football. I could have, but I didn't.
Okay. Yes or
but
no?
But I said I did.
Yes or no, you did Shakespeare in the Park?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Well, okay. Stop. After he came off meth this last time at Celebrity Rehab, he had some memory difficulties, which is common when you come off meth. Remember this, Tom?
I had what?
Memory trouble. Remember you had the memory problems when you came off meth and you couldn't concentrate?
Oh, my God. I couldn't remember anything.
Yeah,
that
and
was
he,
terrible.
It flipped him
it
out.
It went on for like 2 months.
Yeah,
dude,
he thought, I know. I couldn't reassure you. I kept trying to tell you it's going to get better. And he'd start quoting Iago. He'd do all the Iago speeches. He'd just go, look.
That Cassio loves her, I do well believe it. That she loves him, 'tis apt and of great credit. The more, howbeit that I endure him not. That was the only thing I could remember. That and
so that
the
survived
second.
The meth abuse?
Yes.
That provided me with a hope. Because Drew, I said my brain, my inside of my head feels like a dirt road, a dry dirt road. Mm. And I'm scared that I've hurt myself, because you can hurt yourself with meth.
Yeah.
Well, and Drew said, you've not hurt. He said, I know. He said, you have to trust me. You've not hurt yourself, because he probably thought that I would think, if I've hurt myself, well, fuck it. I might as well have already done it. I might as well leave.
So you figured I was lying to you? Is that
what's that?
He was lying to you to make you feel better?
No.
Okay.
I didn't
think
that.
No. But it just took quite some time for me to
feel better. Okay, say yes or no, Corcoran Prison. Yes or no?
What's that?
What prison were you in?
What prison was I in?
Yeah. Corcoran?
Okay, I went to... No, that was Downey was in Corcoran. I went to Delano Reception. Then I went to Chino Prison to do
my prison
time.
Hang on.
Then I went to Chino. Hang on. And I was in Chino. And the actor who was in Prison Break, that guy who had the car accident and the kid died.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He was there already. So the warden... didn't want all these two actors here, and he had me up to his office one day and asked if I was averse to transferring prisons, and I said, well, not, they're all kind of the same, aren't they? I'm fine. Transferring prisons will make you happy.
What a people pleaser.
Did you tell you were about to tell a story? Did you tell it yet?
Then I was transferred to what is called Pleasant Valley State Prison in Coalinga, California, and it's not pleasant, and it's not in a valley. That's what it's called.
Well, and the great thing about this is this is all accurate in the book. My favorite of the Tomisms was, you had the best story I've ever heard about dating this woman from a 90s soap, and then I remember...
Saving what?
A woman from a 90s soap, and I remember...
I saved her?
No,
the
you
90s
dated her.
Soap.
You dated an actress, and I remember thinking it was the greatest story I'd ever heard, and I ran it by your dad, and he goes, oh, no, that was just a woman with the same name. And I go back to you, and you're like, oh, I thought you knew that I was pulling your leg.
Well, my wife was on the soap.
Different woman.
Who was it?
No, we can't say. Well, it wasn't even true. I'll tell you after. But
how do you know it wasn't true?
Because your dad told me, and then I and then I went back to you, and you said, "Oh, well, I thought you knew it wasn't true." So,
I probably didn't think that you knew it was. I probably knew I was lying to you.
Yeah.
You probably did, but you did it better than anybody I've ever been around.
I really never thought the book was going to come out, Anna. I never thought we were going to finish it at a certain point. I didn't think it was ever going to be finished. And I wasn't forthright with you until the last part of the book.
Oh, God. Net, let's not get sued now. But
no. You did it. You did a very good job with the book.
The book is amazing.
I would like to do the book now over again, because I would be completely forthright from the beginning, and it would be a much better book.
Well, the thing that was what I learned to
do. I didn't talk a lot about me, about what was.
Oh, you did.
No, but honestly, talk about me.
Well, but what I would do, Tom, is I would go and I would fact check by, you know, calling. I remember Scott Silver, and you know.
I talked to Scott last week.
You did. Mm-hmm.
He's a liar too.
Well, let's hope everything was accurate.
They fact checked it.
Well, let me say that. Here's the thing I want to say. So
David Vigliano and I are friendly.
But let me tell you this. This is what I think. Because
Bob, why do you have two microphones?
I'm talking into the end of the phone. Oh, the other one. Oh. No, this is it. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you well.
Okay, so they want you to talk about not your life so much, but the celebrities you know.
Who wants that?
Editors, book publishers, the people in charge, managers.
Yeah, but you really can't talk about them.
I went through that myself. It's like there's a lot of interesting stuff in my life that doesn't have anything to do with Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
But all they really want to hear is Johnny Depp, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. All biographies are bullshit.
Yeah. Well, I will say that ironically enough,
Bob, you're just as interesting or more interesting than those fellows. They just happen to be very famous.
Yeah, but why the publishing industry is based around that? You know that.
Well, with Tom, they really didn't care about that, and I think that's because his life story was so crazy.
And Tom is already lofty enough.
It wasn't that crazy. What's so crazy about my life? I was a very successful actor. I got addicted to drugs, and I went nuts.
No, you're right. No, but he's right.
Yeah, that's not that unusual.
He is absolutely right. That's exactly right. That's how I look at things too. It's like, why? Yeah, he followed
the normal path.
No, but he got sick and he got crazy and now he's better. It's like that's the story.
But it's dramatic.
It's dramatic, and so that was a good thing that they didn't care about who you knew. And that story of, you know, you had a very famous guy do your first intervention. So that was
that's a great story.
That was true.
Yeah.
Tell you know the story?
He did more than one. He did a couple.
Yeah. I like the one where you jumped in the car trying to run away from him.
I said I needed a Walkman. And he said, no, you don't. No, you don't. You need to come check in and we'll get a Walkman later. And I said, no, Bob, I need a Walkman now. And he said, oh, stop it. And I said, no, I'm going to get a Walkman and I'm going to get it now. And the car was rolling to a stop and I opened the door and I rolled out.
You need that. You need music.
It's going like 2 miles an hour.
Tom and music go synonymous.
We got to take a quick break. Be right back. I'd like to introduce you all to our latest sponsor. It is the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. They're in Montana. And if you've been listening to anything that Bob and I have been talking about over the years, you know that we're very particular about an addiction treatment. We don't take recommendations lightly, so we've looked into these guys pretty carefully. And the Rocky Mountain Treatment Center happens to be one I am able to recommend, and I'm happy to do so. They focus on individualized treatment of the patients, including their entire well-being based on a biopsychosocial model. This is what Bob and I have done for years and years. They don't just look at addiction. They look at the psychiatric issues, the psychological issues, the trauma issues, all aspects of the physical and mental health. And of course, you've heard me stress the importance of this for long-term success. There's staying sober, but there's what I call real recovery, which is dealing with all the risk factors that set people up for bad addiction. They're in Great Falls, Montana. It's a 26-bed facility surrounded by amazing Montana landscape. Patients can have a range of recreational therapies, including equine therapy. For more information on Rocky Mountain Treatment Center, click on their banner on the thislifepodcast.com website or at drdrew.com or visit their site at rocky.rehab. That is simply rocky.rehab. We're all back, Tom. So wait, was this the one you were filming in New York City? Is this the one you're talking about? You're in Manhattan, and I'm blanking the name on
Robert De Niro.
De Niro. De Niro. Yeah, De Niro cornered you in your trailer, and he was going to take you to treatment at the end of the day, and you dove in a car and drove off. Do you remember
that story? That's all true.
Do you remember this? Did he tell you this story when you were in the book?
The story that I remember was the one about, I think, shooting Heat, and it all happened in L.A. Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
It happened in L.A.
And
we were on the set. This is what happened. The last day of my – I had agreed 2 days prior. My psychiatrist was Dr. David Scott May, and I went to my session, And when I went to my session, he said, "Excuse me, Tom. I have to do something very quickly." And he left his office, and he walked back in with Bob De Niro, my mother, my brother, and that was it. And then we all talked. It was kind of shocking, but we made an agreement that I was going to wrap the movie in 3 or 4 days, and that I agreed then to go to Sierra Tucson Treatment Center.
Oh, nice. So, treatment center. Nice.
So that was the agreement. So the day came to, like, 3 days later, and I was doing my last day of work, which wasn't, oddly enough, when I was shot by Pacino. And I had this thing on my head where the bullet went in it, the thing they build they build a forehead that they can do a squib out of. So we did it, and we got it. So Bob said, go to makeup and get that off. De Niro wasn't working. He came there to take me. And on the way to makeup, I had told my assistant at the time, Glenn, to pull my Mustang over to this idle right here. And on the way to makeup, I'm walking with Michael Waxman, the first AD. And I said, "Michael, I'm going to go." And he said, "No, you're not going anywhere, man. We're going over here." And I went, "Really?" And I just said, boom, I just took off running, and I ran, and I dove. I had to dive, like, I don't know, maybe 7 feet. And I ended up in the top down, thankfully. I told him that, and I dove into the back seat. And I, like, I was John Dillinger, I thought. And I drove to the Lowe's Hotel. And I checked in there, and then I thought that was too obvious a place. And then I went to Shutters. And I was in Shutters, and then they found me.
They
found me a couple days later.
That's
and
what you call not ready for treatment. Not ready yet.
No, not ready. I wasn't really ready yet.
But God bless De Niro for trying. I mean, he had all the right ideas. You know,
when I opened the door up, and I had ordered some food, right? And then they knocked on the door, and I opened the door up, and it was him. I closed it, and I. And I locked the door.
If only it had been like 15 years later. I went to the bathroom and I called him
and said,
"But that wasn't even meth, right? That was heroin and coke back then."
Oh, stop it, Bob! You're gonna make me sound like a complete dope fiend. That was heroin and coke. That was heroin and coke.
I told you.
Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, heroin and coke.
Yeah.
And I actually got sober then, and I stayed sober from 95 to 97. I relapsed and I got clean again, and I was clean and not blaming anybody. But until I met Heidi, and against her better judgment, she said she took this drug out in my house. We were just starting seeing each other, and I said, "What's that?" And she said, It's trailer park dope. I said, what is it, that meth stuff? And she said, yeah. And I said, let me have some of it. And she said, well, aren't you clean? And I was. And I was getting ready to go do Black Hawk Down in a few days. And I thought, I can do a couple. I'm leaving. And I did a couple of lines, and I liked it. And I went away to do the movie. And then I had a break of like 2.5 weeks. And I came back from Morocco to L.A. And during those 2.5 weeks was when I got addicted to it.
A love affair that would last for many years.
You mean with Heidi or
no? Math.
You know, Lemmy just died. You ever have any run-ins with Lemmy?
With Lemmy?
Lemmy from Motorhead.
No,
he was into math.
He just died.
He just passed away.
I didn't really hang. I didn't really ever hang around people that did drugs except for you.
And Tom, let me tell you something. Tom, one of the weirdest things, the weirdest thing of working with Bob is literally we'll be working with somebody for a couple years and he'll go, oh, yeah, that guy, I used to run with him. We just slammed drug together. I'm like, what? How did you tell me that five minutes in?
Bob probably doesn't remember this, but he took me to John Frusciante's house one night. We took a couple people over there, and I was one of them. And Bob was talking to John about sketching. John had sketched somebody who was in a bathtub, and was it you, Bob, that he was sketching?
No, I was in the living room. But yeah, I was in the living room, and he thought I was dead, and I wasn't dead.
So he sketched a picture of you?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He thought Bob was dead, and he thought he'd sketch him before he called 911.
Oh my God!
There was no calling 911 up there.
Oh my God!
There was no.
Is that the house you burned down with him?
He did. John did. I didn't.
His house burned down shortly thereafter.
That's Bob's fault too.
No, it wasn't. He was surprised I wasn't in the house.
That's right. Tell that.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I have a lust for life, and all the people that we're talking about have a lust for life. And we ran together, and it was a fun, crazy, dangerous, scary, you know, and looking back
fucked
on
up.
It was fucked up, and then we all ended up sober. Or dead.
Or dead.
Yeah.
That's the miracle. We didn't all end up sober, but most of us did.
Most did. There's a few that are still going.
Those that didn't are dead or are still using. I don't know that anybody that's really using.
And I know Drew would think it's weird that Heidi would bring out dope around a sober person, and
no,
and that used to happen a lot.
I know.
And are you being facetious that he would think that was weird?
Yeah, that sober people would hang out with people doing drugs. The Viper Room had half sober people and half high out of their minds.
That's
people.
Los Angeles. That's true. Yeah, that's Hollywood.
That's true. Yeah. Sal that ran the Viper Room was sober for decades.
Even in 2000, Bob, there was a lot of ignorance, like with me, for instance, and Heidi about how dangerous these drugs were. You know,
that's true.
I didn't appreciate how dangerous they were until much, much later. Like in 2009.
And then when you're into it, you don't want to hear it either. You know, you can't hear it.
I mean, I had fun for a while, and then I, of course, didn't have any fun. And then after I was completely fucked up from it, and I tried to stop on my own, and it was hopeless. I couldn't stop.
Each drug has its own negative kind of connotations. Oh, but yeah. When you survive or you sort of make it past heroin, and you're kind of functioning still in your 30, you start to think all other drugs aren't like that, and each one of them has their own destructive things, alcohol and pot being the new ones.
Yeah,
a lot of people that turn away from heroin and then get on alcohol and pot and think it's harmless or nothing,
or
and
get on
up...
just other opiates,
or how about benzos, blah blah blah, doctors give them stuff. But Tom, I'm just speaking of doctors giving stuff, I'm just flashing on when we first got you.
You were on 11 meds when we first dealt with you. On 11 meds.
And we found balloons of heroin stashed.
Regular psych meds too, though.
Yeah, I know.
From the doctor.
Yeah. But at PRC, when we got you to Pasadena Recovery Center first time?
Oh, I had like $2,000 of drugs on my ankle.
Yeah, and some of them ended up in trash cans and all over the place.
Oh, that was on the show.
Yeah, but here's what I remember.
Well, Drew, you crossed me up with that Ativan shot. You gave me that Ativan shot, and I was trying to hide my drugs in the bathroom.
I gave him enough to put down a large elephant because I had to get him to stop. And I was like, Tom, come here. And boom.
It wasn't very nice of you, Drew.
And he was really, pushing really through it. Me. You kept pushing through it.
Because of the meth?
I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. I was like, this man should be unconscious. I got to get him to stop.
He could not knock me down. He tried to knock me down.
And remember, he kept wanting to leave the ground.
Stupering around. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I thought he was going to bolt. This is terrible. He needs to, like, land. And he was psychotic. And it was just, oh, my God.
It was terrible. I'm so glad that fucking bullshit's over with.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the next morning when I woke up, four days later, I went to that bathroom, and all the drugs were gone. So I went to Shelly.
I think I went to Shelly. Yeah.
I left some things in the bathroom, and she said, "Your heroin and speed, no, it's gone."
Yes, I remember.
And
that.
I said, "Well, that wasn't anyone's to throw out." It was mine. So someone
you bought that. You bought that.
Considering they take away mouthwash in rehab,
I'm getting anxiety just having this conversation. I
PTSD.
Tell you.
Well, Drew, do you know what one of the turning points though was? Like, I was like day six or seven. You came into my room and you said, "You know, Tom, I know you're not feeling well, obviously, but you're going to have to get up eventually and take a shower, and more importantly, come to group. So why don't we do that today?" And I looked at you, and I know how kind of person you are, really, Drew. And you said, "You can do it," and I did it. And then that was really truly the first time I did something I didn't want to do. That
it's good. I think you told me to fuck off, but in a good nature.
No, I never told you. I never said fuck off to you, Drew. Never.
That's right. You're right.
I said fuck off to everybody else on earth. But
you're
you.
Right. It's true. I never really. I don't remember anything like that coming from you. So I appreciate that.
Never. I treated you always with absolute respect.
Yeah. Speaking of respect, how's your mom? How's Judy?
Oh, she's good. Everybody's good that I'm sober.
Oh, then she must.
Okay, let's get back to the fact checking. How are you related to the Sizemores of baseball?
Ted Sizemore is my dad's first cousin.
Okay,
that's my father's sister's son.
Okay.
And my second cousin.
And his
Jerry
kids,
Sizemore.
His kids are the Sizemores. Grady Sizemore.
Grady Sizemore is a relative of mine. I don't know which way. I don't think he's a third or fourth cousin.
That's so funny. There's so many facts about Tom that are so interesting, Drew.
Ted grew up in Detroit. Ted grew up in Detroit and went to Western High School where my dad went. He went to the University of Michigan where he was an All-American catcher, and he was the first round pick by the Dodgers, and he was Rookie of the Year as a second baseman, and then they traded him to the Cardinals.
Did you check those facts?
Was part of our family.
Yes, and we're gonna assume that Tom is like this is like a truth serum was injected like the way Ativan was. So everything now is true.
What's that? Everything now is true. We're gonna stick to the facts.
I'm not all fucked up and shit.
Okay, now this is where the diagnosis gets hard with you. You are such a great actor, Thomas. You are such a great actor that I've always thought sometimes you don't know whether it's real life or acting.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Do you know when you're acting?
Well, I'm acting like right now that you didn't ask me that's such a stupid question. Yeah, I know the difference, Bob.
Not like crazy mentally ill, but you really don't think you confuse what real life is and
I think what happens when you're really not well, you start lying so much that you can't tell what the hell's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think that's what starts true. Happening.
And then it all becomes
He may use acting to sustain his lies, but you don't as a sober person watching it, it's like, what's going on? Right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
How do you be such a good actor? How do you get
start fabricating things? It's just they just all kind of get on top. You have to keep lying to lie.
So here's the thing: there are actors like there's a lot of actors, but there's only a few masters. And I think it's what makes an actor? What makes a great actor? Because you are a great actor.
Is it all God given with hard work, or are there ways to get there?
Because I think I think it's a byproduct of how fucked up you are. I think how tortured you are is a part of why you're such a great actor, that you can access that deep, deep.
Unfortunately, I think with me, I think it's all individual. With me, I think that's unfortunately true.
Well, but why would you say unfortunately? It's an unfortunate Ooh. History, but you're turning it into a gift.
Yeah. Well, I think that I know I did this. I think the drugs I thought made me more interesting and made my emotions more accessible to me, when in point of fact they didn't, but I thought that they did. Mm. And they ended up torturing me. And I thought it made me more interesting. I don't know why.
There you go.
Hang on. Don't go anywhere. Hang on. My phone died.
That is Tom fucking Sizemore, baby.
He's got to plug it in.
I'm still amazed we managed to make it work.
The energy, it's just so off.
For anybody listening, we had Skype issues. He's on a phone while we're using Skype at the same time, and his phone just died. But Tom very kindly made himself accessible for this program today, which was
fun.
Yeah, it's cool.
Okay, everybody all set?
Yeah.
We're good. Can you hear me?
Yep. You hear us, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that great actors are, I think you have to be born with some kind of quality of, I don't know what it is, that you want to be an actor, number one. But I don't think you can make a, I just don't think you can be a great actor unless you have some type of gift from the beginning. Yeah. And of course a desire to be one too. I mean, but
my idea is the
like Robert Downey Jr. is like one of the most gifted people I've ever met. And I know other actors that are good actors, but they don't have the gifts that like Robert has, or certain actors that I worked with when coming up that they just seem to be just gifted, you know?
But my thing is about trauma. When you look at the greatest trauma, the greatest musician songwriters in the world are traumatized people. John Lennon, Kurt Cobain, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
People that lived through the world, all the Rolling Stones and Beatles lived while bombs were dropping off when they were children. All over England.
Yeah.
Trauma has something to do with expression, that has something to do with art. And you were a deep, deep trauma survivor, and you were a deep, deep actor, Tom Sizemore.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I do think...
What do you think Kurt promised for?
Kurt Cobain?
Yeah, I mean, Kurt didn't have bombs dropping at him.
Oh, but he had all kinds
abandonment,
of... Abandonment,
living under a bridge, you know.
He had abuse and childhood.
Hideous stuff. Yeah.
I think Kurt was abused as a kid.
Yeah, right, for sure.
All of it, all of it.
Emotionally abused.
John Lennon's sister was his mother.
What?
Wendy?
You didn't know that?
Are you going to get confused with Chinatown?
Julia. That, you didn't know that? He was raised by his Auntie Mimi, and he didn't know that... Julia, her sister, was his mother.
Just like you. Yep. Bob Forrest story.
Yeah.
I will say, dramatic actors, I know very few personally that aren't kind of tortured.
Hmm. Yeah.
That aren't good.
I'm saying it's
in all the deep art. I'm not saying you can't be a good, happy guy and have Home Improvement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm talking about deep shit.
It does seem that a lot of our greater artists have had traumatic lives. Mm.
Charlie Chaplin, you know the Charlie Chaplin story. When you talk about Downey playing Charlie Chaplin, there's trauma on top of trauma. There's a trauma survivor playing a trauma survivor.
Trauma square.
Let me give you a little Leonardo da Vinci story. He was raised in this terrible household. I forget his aunt's uncle, and they had an older kid there who was apparently Leonardo da Vinci, and there's an older kid there, like 10 years older, who was like a really like a psychopath. He ended up acting out, violent, dying young, and stuff, and. He kept having some feelings that the child used to abuse him. And then he goes, and then I had a dream about a crow putting his tail into my mouth. And I thought, oh, boy.
Tail of a crow in your mouth.
Yeah.
Now, that didn't happen to us, Tom, but it's good to talk to you and good to see you. And I love you. And thanks for doing this.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, Tom.
We're done?
Yeah, we're done, man. We'll see you soon.
All right,
guys. All right, Tom, thanks.
I love all of you.
Miss you.
Bye. Happy holidays. Okay.
All right. Bye. Happy holidays.
The great Tom Sizemore.
People get sense.
And peace in the valley.
It was interesting. I will say that it's important to get his number, since it changed. I think it changed 9 or 10 times during the time we were doing the book, and I never asked why.
You just always call Charles.
I think there was still, as we would say, a problem in the spirit at that point. That is largely better.
He's gotten way better, man. You can just tell. I've been saying it for a long time. Nobody listens to me.
No, I'm with you. I listen. I love this life. But I hope everybody gets the same sense of affection that he generates in us. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that he is one of the more affectionate, sweet, you know, a certain percentage of the time, the sweetest, smartest, most affectionate, most generous person I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's not 100% of the time. But
who is?
Yeah.
He has outbursts.
Yeah, he does.
I bet they're less now. So the book is called
By Some Miracle, I Made It Out of There.
You can get it at DonDrew.com. I also did an interview with Tom Sizemore at the DonDrew podcast, podcast number 75, if you go to DonDrew.com. And reminder that today's program is courtesy of Rocky Mountain Treatment Center. And
I'm going to go there.
Yes, go check it all out and investigate it very carefully, so we will have an intimate understanding of their services, and Bob will report back.
This Life, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.
See you next time.
Oh, heroin and cocaine, I love them both, yeah.